As we think about the Gospel of Mark presenting Jesus to us, and we want to ask the question, who is Jesus this morning? As the confusion surrounding him, as we saw there in Mark chapter 6, verses 14 through 16, a lot of people didn't know who he was. So I want to play a little game with you as we get started this morning. See if you can guess who this is. As a child, he learned to speak late in life. He was, in fact, not fluent in speaking even by the age of 9 years old. His parents were afraid that he was mentally handicapped. He was a poor pupil in school. So much so that when his father asked his teacher what profession this child should go toward, the answer was simply, "It doesn't matter. He'll never be successful at anything." He was expelled from school at the age of 14 for disruptive behavior and failed the entrance exam to be able to get into university. Throughout his life, he was chronically absent-minded, forgetting his keys, neglecting to put on his socks, unable to figure the correct change. He worked as a clerk in the patent office in Switzerland. And yet, this man who, as story tells it, even got lost walking around the block, is someone that you all know. In fact, he's quite famous and is often considered one of the smartest individuals of the 20th century. His name was Albert Einstein. We're more familiar, perhaps, with some of his theories, like the theory of relativity. But he struggled greatly to be someone of importance early on in his life. I want to share with you another story, a little different. This child was born in an obscure village to a teen unwed mother who was a peasant. He grew up in another village where he worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then, for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family, no children or wife. He never owned a home. He didn't go to college or schooling of any kind beyond the rudimentary education. He never lived in a big city. He never traveled more than 200 miles from the place where he was born. And he did none of the things that usually accompany greatness. He was only 33 when the tide of public opinion turned against him, and his friends ran away. One of them denied him. One of them turned him over to his enemies. And then he was executed. While he was dying, the executioners gambled for his garments, which were the only property he had on the earth. When he was dead, he was buried in a borrowed tomb through the pity of a friend. It's been nearly 2,000 years since then, and yet now he is perhaps the most famous individual who's ever lived. And that, of course, is Jesus Christ. That information from a poem called One Solitary Life, written by James Allen Francis. But who is this Jesus? As we go through the book of Mark, Mark paints a picture of someone who is different things to different people. We talked in our auditorium class this morning about how sometimes people see what they want to see, hear what they want to hear. People hear and see different things, even when the same information is coming to them. They take it differently. And that certainly was the case with Jesus. You see, Jesus was a nobody. He came from nowhere. In fact, so much so that in one of the other Gospels, one of his soon-to-be disciples, when he first heard of where he was from, that he was from Nazareth, his response was, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" He had no background. His parents weren't famous. No ancestry until you get way back into the times of David. He had no credentials. He hadn't been to any fancy schools. Hadn't been taught or trained in anything other than carpentry. He had no position. He wasn't part of the in crowd. He wasn't one of the Pharisees. He certainly wasn't someone who was going to be sitting on the Sanhedrin council or any of those things. All he had was himself and the message that he preached that he believed in so strongly, and a father who was well pleased with him. Not his earthly father, because that wasn't really his father, but that was enough. Mark explains that he appeared out of nowhere and was baptized by John. Now, that's a little different because Matthew goes back into Jesus' ancestry, as Luke does as well. Matthew and Luke tell about his miraculous birth, and the angels singing, and the shepherds coming, and then later kings coming to visit him. Mark tells none of that. Mark just springs him on us as a full-grown man about to enter into his ministry. No background, no nothing. It's only incidentally that Mark mentions that Jesus was from Nazareth and had brothers and sisters and that he was a carpenter. And that's only because that's what the people from there said when he went back home. That we find out about those things. Well, isn't he the son of the carpenter? Aren't his brothers and sisters here, right here with us? Mark doesn't even give us the little bit of insight that Luke does. Remember, Luke tells us when Jesus was 12 how he went to the temple and astonished everybody with his religious knowledge. Mark doesn't even give us anything like that. We don't meet Jesus until he's about 30 years old. And we don't know anything about what he's done from what Mark presents to us. Mark doesn't use the Old Testament to try to prove that Jesus is the Messiah like Matthew and Luke and even John do. He doesn't quote those prophecies. He doesn't have people like Simeon and Anna showing up and bursting into song about this child who's going to be the Messiah. He doesn't have any of that. In fact, Mark presents only two sentences from John the Baptist. And then one sentence, a statement from a voice out of heaven that nobody else even understood. Some of them standing around said, "Oh, maybe it thundered." That voice was only understood by Jesus himself. But then John gives just a couple of sentences telling who this man is that's coming. We don't know anything from Mark about Jesus' background. Who is this nobody? People wondered about Jesus. The common folk talked about him around the dinner table. The religious leaders sent delegations to listen to him, try to discover what he was all about and to try to trap him and trick him and find a way to condemn him. The disciples knew he was special, but they weren't sure exactly what to make of him either. And the rumors floated around. The rumors about who is this guy? And we see those rumors. But you see, his accomplishments were great. Yes, Jesus was a nobody. But because of what he did and because of what he taught, he couldn't be ignored. People had to deal with him in some way. He was teaching with power and authority like none of the scribes did. He became quite popular and well known. His name spread around. People were talking about him. He possessed these miraculous powers to be able to heal the sick, cast out demons, raise the dead even. Surely he must be somebody special because a nobody couldn't do those things. And so people began to wonder all the more. We must consider the powerful Jesus. Mark chapter 4 verses 35 through chapter 6 and verse 29. Jesus is shown throughout these verses as different people are trying to figure out who he is. And each of us has to grapple with this same thing. Who do we think that Jesus is? Who will we allow him to be in our lives? Is he just going to be a curiosity? Is he just going to be someone that we wonder about? Or are we actually going to get to know him and find out about him? The power that Jesus possesses, the way that he shows himself forth in all of these situations, forces people to make a decision about his identity. Who is he really? Of course, the result is that some people are going to move closer to him, and other people are going to be pushed further away. Nobody is able to stay neutral when it comes to Jesus Christ. A decision must be made. As we consider the powerful Jesus who comes on the scene, teaching and performing miracles, I love the way Mark just jumps right into the story. No preamble, no childhood, no, he just right to the point. Here is this guy out of nowhere who comes teaching and preaching and performing miracles. And the most striking feature of this section from the end of chapter 4 into through chapter 6 is the powerful deeds that Jesus performs. The ability that he has goes far beyond anything natural, goes far beyond even the things that the prophets of old had done. Now, when you are living in a land where for 400 years God has been silent, and there haven't been any miracles, and there haven't been any visions, and there haven't been any prophecies, and then John comes on the scene talking about someone's coming, get ready. And then he bursts on the scene, and he's performing miracles, and he's teaching, and he's prophesying. It's going to make a powerful impact. He shows his mastery over nature, over Satan, over sickness, and even over death in this 2.5 chapter section. In chapter 4, verses 35 through 41, we see that Jesus has the power to calm a storm. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever tried to calm a storm, but it really doesn't work very well for a man or a woman to go out and shake their fist at the storm clouds and the wind and the thunder and lightning and tell it to go away. You know, we sing that little children's song, rain, rain, go away, come again another day. And you know what? It never listens. The storm does what the storm wants to do, and we have no power over it. They talk about the idea of, you know, someday having the ability to control the weather. In science fiction stories, of the future. They talk about, there's no storms, it rains when it's supposed to, and all of these kinds of things. We can't even predict the weather, much less control it. And yet here is Jesus in the midst of a furious storm so bad that his disciples are afraid that they're going to be sunk. The ship is going to be overflowed with water. This isn't just an ordinary storm. You've got to understand, at least four of these disciples were fishermen who had been fishing out on that sea all their lives. And they dealt with storms before. But not like this. They were scared that they were going to die. But Jesus just stands up and says, "Be quiet, be still." And the storm stopped. The disciples are stunned by this, and they ask that question, "Who is this guy? Even the winds and the waves listen to him." Who is he? There's something special about him, no doubt. And then in chapter 5, beginning in verse 1 and through verse 20, we see that he has the power to cast out demons. Now, we've already seen this earlier in Mark, and the Pharisees, of course, attributed that to, he's casting out demons by the power of the devil himself. But we see again, he's still casting out Satan. He's casting these demons out. He shows that he has power over Satan and his forces. This guy in Mark chapter 5 is way beyond any of the others that Jesus has dealt with. He's cast out some individual demons out of people before. But this guy is no case of ordinary demon possession. He lives in the graveyard. They couldn't even bind him with chains. He would break them. Day and night he's screaming and cutting himself with stones. And come to find out, there's not one demon living in this guy. There is a legion of demons living in this guy. Dozens of them. And yet, as strong and powerful as all of these demons are, Jesus is more powerful. He sends them out with a word. Go. That's all he has to say. Just go. Get out. The man has changed. He wears clothes now. He was running around naked before. Can you imagine what a scary... I have to save that one for the devotional tonight. A little scary story about a naked guy possessed by demons screaming in the graveyard at night. But that had to be a frightening thing. And yet here he is then. He's sitting. He's clothed. He's in his right mind. And when the people realize that Jesus is the one that did this, they're more scared of him than they were of the guy that was in the graveyard running around screaming all the time. There are 2,000 pigs dead floating in the lake or sunk to the bottom of the lake as proof that Jesus had mastery over demons. And then we see Jesus' power to heal the sick. His power is so great. When we see this portrayed in different ways at different times, sometimes it's because he doesn't even have to touch, he can say it with the word. Sometimes he heals at a distance. In this case, he heals without even trying to. He's so powerful in Mark 5, 24 through 34, he's not even trying to heal this person. This woman comes. She's been sick not just for a week or a month. She's been sick for 12 years. She'd suffered at the hands of a lot of different doctors that didn't have a clue what to do about her. She'd spent every penny she had, and she hadn't gotten any better. In fact, she's getting worse. But Jesus isn't an ordinary physician. She knows, deep in her soul, she believes that if she can just touch even his clothes, she could be healed. And so as the crowd is pressing around him, she works her way in to get close enough to reach out and just barely touches the hem of his robe. And immediately, she knows she's better. And you ever had a time like that where you were sick and then there was that point where you could feel, I'm better now. Now, in most of those cases, we were getting better and we just like, okay, I've turned a corner and I'm not as sick as I was. I'm starting to feel better now than I was a little while ago. My fever broke or something like that. But with her, it wasn't just, well, I can tell I'm starting to get better. She immediately felt well again. She hadn't felt that for 12 long years. And Jesus feels the power go from him. He wasn't trying to heal her. In fact, he asked, well, who touched me? But who is this who can heal someone without even trying because the power is emanating from him so strongly? Can we imagine? And then we see in Mark chapter 5, verses 21 down through 43 or so, that he has the power over death. A young girl has died. The messenger, the father comes and she's about to die. She's sick. Says, please come. Then the messengers come and say, she's dead. It's too late. Don't bother him anymore. She's already dead. But Jesus says, don't worry about it. Let's keep going. Just believe. Everything's going to be fine. And so they go on and they get to the house. The mourners are there mourning. They know she's dead. But here is how Luke accounts this. He explains that her spirit's already left her. Here's how powerful Jesus is. He treats death like sleep. You know how you go and wake somebody up? Sometimes it's hard. We're trying to wake the kids up in the morning to get ready for church. It's hard to wake them up, and they're sleeping like the dead sometimes, it seems like. But you can wake them. Somebody's asleep, you wake them up. Jesus treated death that way. Do you remember, this was in John, the case of Lazarus when he had died? Jesus tells the disciples, Lazarus is sleeping, but I've got to go wake him up. And they're confused. They're like, well, if he's sleeping, that's a good thing. You know, when you're sick, you need your rest, you sleep, you get better. And Jesus had to explain to them, no, what I'm telling you is he's dead. But I'm still going to go wake him up. So that, you know, some people thought, well, Jesus got there and he didn't know what he was going to do. And then at the last minute, he decided to. No, he already knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead before he left to go there. He told him, he's sleeping and I got to go wake him up. But Jesus can sit, and that's what he says to these girls, this girl's parents, and to all those there. He says, oh, she's not dead, she's just sleeping. Now they laughed at him because they thought he's crazy. We know she's dead. But to Jesus, death is just like sleep. You just go wake him up. And he did. Jesus' power over death is shown so clearly here. So what do you think of this Jesus? This Jesus who confounded the disciples by his power over nature. This Jesus who, when he did that, in chapter 4 and verse 41, it says the disciples are terrified. They're afraid. They were afraid of the storm. And then when Jesus stopped the storm, then they're afraid of him. Like, the storm was powerful. He's more powerful. And then he casts out the demon. Look at that, chapter 5 and verse 15, and then also verse 30. I mean, they were scared of the guy in the tombs, but then this guy comes along and heals him, casts that demon, the demons out of him. We're more scared of him. They begged him, go away. Please don't stay around here. I mean, does that not seem a little backwards to you? I'm thinking, we got this guy who's terrorizing the neighborhood, and Jesus comes along and solves your problem for you. Wouldn't you say, hey, let's have a celebration. We're going to have a parade in honor of you, and we're going to, well, you know, come for a big dinner. We're going to have a feast, and stick around here. There's probably some other sick people that you could... But no, they say, get out of here. Go away. Please stay far away from us. Of course, it may have to do with those 2,000 dead pigs. I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of bacon that they lost out on. But then we see this woman is trembling in fear when Jesus calls her forward after she's been healed. Chapter 5 and verse 33. And then in chapter 5 and verse 42, the parents of the girl and the disciples are completely astonished. Now, he didn't take everybody with him in that case. He only took a few in. But they were completely astonished. He's raised somebody from the dead? Because I don't know about you, but I've heard death is kind of a permanent situation. That you die, you stay dead. But Jesus said, no, I'll wake them up. And he did that, and it scared these folks. You see, this powerful Jesus provokes an identity crisis for people. The disciples are struggling with the identity of Jesus. Other people are struggling with the identity of Jesus. The disciples ask, who is this that even the wind and waves obey him? How did he do that? Who is this guy? What kind of man can do these things? Well, a man who's not just a man. That's who. His neighbors question his identity in chapter 6 and verses 1 through 6. They see these miraculous things, but they know who he is. This is the carpenter's son. You know, his brothers and sisters are living here in town. Where did he get the ability to do this stuff? They can't deny that he's doing it, but they're offended. And you know, part of that maybe, you know, well, why didn't he help us out when he was living here? He leaves and goes off and does it all there, and well, why didn't he do it for us? And in fact, one of the Gospels explains that when he went back to his hometown, he couldn't do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. People wouldn't even, they wouldn't even bring the sick to him. You know, in other places we talk about, they come in crowds so thick that four friends have to dig a hole in the roof to let their friend down to get to Jesus to be healed. But when he goes back to his hometown, they're not that interested. He gets a completely different reaction from them. We know he didn't go to school. How's he get off talking about being a teacher and teaching people? He didn't go to school. He was never trained to be a preacher. They've got it all figured out. But then we come to chapter 6 and verses 14 through 16. We see here Christ's identity is, so who is he? Is he Elijah? Some people thought so. Is he Jeremiah? Is he one of the other prophets? Herod, of course, he had killed John the Baptist. He said, oh, that's John the Baptist come back to life. He's haunting me, you know. I don't know, did he think he was a zombie or a vampire or what, you know, but he's back to life. And here, you know, I thought I killed him and he's back. But that wasn't it either. None of them really understand who he is. But they think he's some kind of prophet, because look at the things that he's doing. It's like Elijah being here again. But Mark is really helping us to see something about faith and discipleship here. That's his point. Jesus is leading the disciples to faith by showing his power. He's leading them to recognize who he really is so they can really trust in him, really believe in him by showing what he can do. He calms the storm. He casts out a demon. What do you think about that? What do you think about me now? Who am I? Who do people say I am? Who do you think I am? Heals the sick woman, raises a dead girl. All of this, he's trying to get people to make that decision. Who is Jesus? Who do you think he is? Who do you believe he is? Yes, Jesus leads his disciples to faith by showing his power. But he also leads his disciples to faith by showing them other people and what other people are thinking. He shows them examples of faith, like this sick woman who's just touched the hem of his garment and I can be healed. And Jesus holds her up as an example. Your faith has made you whole. Your faith has saved you because you believed. And to the disciples, you see this woman? You need to be like her. Now, he didn't say that to them, but that's what he's telling them. When he says to her, oh, this faith that you have, Jairus, his daughter's died, but he still has faith to have Jesus come onto his house anyway. Even though everybody's telling him it's too late, but he still believes. And then, of course, he shows them the example of unbelief when they go back to his hometown. And those people who had grown up knowing him, they didn't believe in him. And the disciples are pointed to, here's what happens when people don't believe. We see around us examples of faith and examples of unbelief and a lack of faith. And God wants us to recognize those and imitate the former and avoid the latter. Have faith. Believe and trust Jesus in all these things. As we conclude, we want to think about three things about faith to carry with us. First of all, faith is not just the acknowledgement of something special about Jesus. Most of the people he encountered believed there was something special about him. They argued about what it was, but they believed there was something special about him. They didn't all have faith. There are a lot of people today who still think there's some special things about Jesus, but they don't have faith in him. Secondly, we want to notice that faith is not the intellectual acceptance of Christ's claim. It's not just a mental assent that, yes, Jesus is the Christ, he is the Son of God. That's not faith. At the start, it's headed in the right direction, but that's not the faith that Jesus calls on us to have. That's not enough. Do you remember what we're taught later on? Even the devils believe that he's the Son of God. And they tremble. Just believing that is not enough. No, instead, faith is the willingness to trust yourself to Jesus. To put your life in his hands. To quit trying to rule your own life and let him rule it. Risk yourself to his care and his lordship. And that's harder to do than it is to acknowledge that, oh, there's something special about Jesus. Oh yes, he is who he claims to be. What are you going to do about that? If he really is who he claims to be, and you really believe that, then are you going to act on it? Are you going to turn your life over to him? Are you going to let him be the Lord of your life and depend on Him to take care of you. Are you doing that? If not, why not? If you've never turned your life over to Christ, the time to do that is now. If you believe in Him and are willing to repent of your sins, to confess Him as the Son of God, be buried with Him to wash your sins away in the waters of baptism. If you have done that at some point in the past, but maybe you've tried to grab the reins back and take control of your own life again, maybe you need to recommit yourself to giving that over to Him and letting Him have that control. Whatever your need may be, if you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and sing.